This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
This is the second hour reading of USA Today. This is the voice of the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired, WRRS in Cincinnati, Ohio. It's Wednesday, May the 1st, and this is Stephen Hoard.
And Jody Hoard.
And we'll be reading the editorial page first, the opinion page, and then we'll come back with the money section, the second section in the everyday publication of USA Today. There are two opinions. The first is by Ingrid Jacques, and she's a regular at USA Today. And her article is entitled, her editorial is entitled, Biden Misses a Chance to Decry Anti-Semitism. President Joe Biden was asked the following by a reporter last week. Mr. President, what's your message to the protesters? Do you condemn the anti-Semitic protests on college campuses? Biden answered, I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians and how they're doing. President didn't complete his thought. His absent-mindedness has come to be expected these days. Yet that's not why his comment is most alarming. What stands out is the blatant hypocrisy of Biden's words. Fine people on both sides. Conservative commentators called out Biden for having a fine people on both sides comment, and I agree. In case you've forgotten, that then-President Donald Trump made the both-sides comment in August of 17 when the neo-Nazis and white supremacists descended on Charlottesville, Virginia. A white supremacist purposely rammed his car into a crowd, killing a woman, injuring 35 people who were there to counter-protest the racist demonstration. It was a terrible incident, one that demanded a response from the president. Yet it took Trump several days before he would condemn those responsible by name. Then the next day, he negated his strong statement by pointing out how there were fine people on both sides. Trump was roundly criticized for his response, as he should have been. It was an ugly, inane attempt to downplay the threat of neo-Nazis, presumably for political reasons. Now Biden is the one who deserves strong criticism. The campus protests that have intensified deserve no support from the president. Recent pro-Palestinian encampments at colleges around the country, many at the most elite schools in the nation, have proved to be vile, anti-Semitic, and even violent. Jewish students and faculty have been targeted, harassed, and assaulted simply for who they are, and many feel afraid to set foot on their campuses. And college administrators have proved woefully inept at enforcing their own codes of conduct and quelling this blatant hatred toward Jews. While students have become the increasingly bold and obnoxious anti-Semitic rhetoric, has royal campuses since October the 7th, when Hamas brutally attacked Israel, murdering at least 1,200 people and kidnapping hundreds of hostages. Horrific messages quickly surfaced at colleges, with students and professors openly embracing Hamas, a terrorist group, as liberators overcoming their Israeli oppressors. Keffiyeh-clad and mask-wearing college students have shouted slogans such as, We are all Hamas, and long live Hamas. A protester brought a Hezbollah flag, another terrorist group, to a demonstration at Princeton. A student responsible for organizing the Columbia University encampment, Kaimani James, has said such disgusting things as Zionists don't deserve to live. James, who was banned from the campus after his comments went viral, he said, quote, be grateful that I'm not just going out and murdering Zionists, end quote. The hatred and violence have gone in one direction, against Jews and anything to do with Israel. Actual terrorists such as Hamas and their sponsors in Iran have even praised the college students for staging protests, a fact that should embarrass and shame those privileged young Americans and their enablers. Surely there's not much here for Biden to equivocate over. Biden has said that the white supremacist protest in Charlottesville and Trump's botched response persuaded him to run for president in 2020. He made it a central part of his campaign announcement in April of 2019, calling out the fangs of racism and the same anti-Semitic and racist bile heard from Europe in the 30s and 40s. Taking a high moral stand versus wooing young voters. And, of course, he invoked Trump. That's when we heard the words from the President of the United States that stunned the world and shocked the conscience of our nation. He said there were some very fine people on both sides. With those words, the President of the United States assigned a moral equivalence between them, those spreading hate and those with the courage to stand up against it. Now President Biden has committed the same error. The hate and ignorance spewing from the mouths of those college students deserve only one response: condemnation. The campus protests could have made a distinction between caring about and trying to help innocent people in Gaza and the terrorists who brought on this war through their barbaric attack. But they haven't, and in many cases, they've doubled down on anti-Semitism. Don't expect Biden to change course, though he's petrified of losing the pro-Palestinian vote. I guess it's not easy to take the moral high ground when you have voters to woo 6 months before the election. This is by Ingrid Jocks, a columnist at USA Today. Jody?
Thank you. The next opinion page or article for today, May the 1st, is titled "Militarizing Campuses Won't Stop Protests" by Sarah Piguino. I took the train up to Columbia University last week to see the depraved New York college students everyone keeps saying are taking over their college campuses. According to social media and news coverage, these students are single-handedly driving our country into chaos by protesting, something that college students have done for decades. Behind the gates and in pockets along the campus perimeter, pro-Palestinian students wore keffiyehs and the traditional Palestinian scarves, waved the Palestinian flag. There was a group of interfaith believers huddled and chanting just off the sidewalk. Nearby were members of Nutria Karta, an Orthodox Jewish group that opposes the State of Israel. Pro-Israel counter-protesters were marching down the streets, making their presence known to the students behind the gates. At one point, I watched as a group of students waved the Palestinian flag over one of Columbia's gates and argued with pro-Israel demonstrators. "You're a Nazi," one pro-Israel protester yelled. "You're all Nazis." Pro-Palestinian demonstrators have been accused of anti-Semitism. On April 21st, the Sunday before Passover, a rabbi who works for Columbia told hundreds of Jewish students via WhatsApp that the university has failed to guarantee their safety and urged them to return home. The following day, Columbia moved classes online. But I didn't see violence, out-of-control students, or chaos on my visit. What I saw were people on either side of the argument saying exactly how they felt about the Israeli-Hamas war, and an Ivy League school that doesn't know how to deal with its aside from it, from militarization. What is happening at Columbia and campuses across the country? For months, there have been protests calling into question U.S. support of Israel. Across the country, demonstrators have blocked roadways, disrupted speeches, and boycotted products. Some of the most vocal dissenters have been on college campuses. Over the past 2 weeks, students at more than 30 campuses have held demonstrations. This has led to hundreds of arrests across the country. Earlier in April, Columbia University called the New York Police Department on demonstrators who had set up an encampment. More than 100 people were arrested. Since then, protests at Yale University, the University of Minnesota, and New York University have led to mass arrests. Police have shown up at multiple schools in riot gear. At the University of Texas in Austin, the administration called in state troopers. This has not stopped students across the country from creating encampments, both in solidarity with the students at Columbia and in protest of the ongoing conflict that has killed more than 34,000 Palestinians after more than 200 days of war. Instead of focusing on the destruction we're witnessing in real time, the administrations of these universities are choosing to reprimand students for practicing their right to protest. On Monday, Columbia announced it began suspending students' hours after demonstrators defied a deadline for clearing the Gaza Solidarity encampment at the center of campus. Tuesday, it shut down the campus after protesters seized an academic building. Law enforcement was everywhere at the protest I visited, and New York Police Department officers and private security guarding the entryways. I understand that they are expected to be there. I'm just not sure it can lead to any genuine resolution. Nothing will escalate a situation more than introducing police in riot gear with zip ties at the ready. Nonviolent protest does not need to be met with weaponry. I don't know why university administrations continue to act as if this will accomplish something, considering there have been so many times before this where it hasn't. The Columbia administration's response harks back to its actions in 1968 during the Vietnam War and the Civil Rights Movement, when the New York Police Department arrested and violently removed more than 700 protesters who had seized university buildings and temporarily took a dean hostage. The university eventually ceded to the demands and severed ties with the Pentagon Institute, but it did not change what these students endured to get their message across. History will remember what university administrators did. What university administrators across the country need to realize is that time isn't on their side. History will remember the way school officials call the police on their students. It's wild to see a group of people be so committed to villainizing themselves in the eye of their students and the general public. I have repeatedly said that Gaza will be one of the top issues of the presidential election. What we're seeing on college campuses is proof of that. It is consistent with the polling we've seen that shows Generation Z is sympathetic to the Palestinian struggle, and it is consistent with the surge of uncommitted votes we've seen in the Democratic primaries. It shouldn't be surprising that this generation is mobilizing against the Israel-Hamas war that, in part, is funded by U.S. tax dollars. An entire generation is telling you exactly how they feel about financially supporting war, and I don't think they'll be backing down anytime soon. And that's by Sarah Pinquino. Steve?
You've been listening to the opinion page of USA Today for today. That's Wednesday, May the 1st. My name is Stephen Hoard, and I'm with
Jody Hoard.
And we're going to move now to the money section of USA Today for May the 1st. I'll be reading the small articles in the left-hand column each day. The first one says, Amsterdam limits new hotel construction. Amsterdam continues to crack down on over-tourism by prohibiting the development of new hotels and limiting the number of travelers allowed to stay overnight in the city. The new initiative seeks to ensure that the number of hotel stays does not increase even further, according to the announcement. Under the new regulation, a new hotel may only be built under certain conditions. If a hotel closes elsewhere, the city said, 26 previously approved hotel projects will proceed with their construction as planned. Oregon woman wins $1 million lottery, a forgotten lottery ticket stuffed in a Tupperware container. Made an Oregon woman a millionaire. Leslie Carr, 52, a Portland resident, bought the $1 million lucky raffle ticket for the March 15th drawing at Fred Meyer in Happy Valley. The Oregon Lottery said, "I had no idea I was the winner," Carr told lottery officials. Claiming her $1 million prize on Monday, Carr, a medical receptionist, plans to take care of some bills before enjoying the rest of her money. Starting with her mortgage, Carr plans to pay off the home that she lives in with her husband. A nice gift to herself is buying a new truck. Tiny house goes viral and goes for $1.7 million. A one-bedroom Silicon Valley home that went viral for its $1.7 million price tag expects to close an offer next month. The 384-square-feet house in Cupertino, California, comes with one bathroom and was built in 1948. According to its description on Zillow, 8 officers on the tiny home came in, primarily from builders and developers, according to listing agent Fabiola Perez. She said hundreds of groups have visited the home, and they got many phone calls after marketing the property to reach maximum exposure. While the home's minuscule size drew plenty of comment, the property's 7,841-square-foot lot made it so valuable. Perez said that she enhanced the appeal by encouraging potential buyers to leverage a loan on the tiny house and make it lendable. Zillow makes a move with Bluey tie-in ad campaign. Millions of Bluey fans were moved to tears when the Heeler family decided against selling their home in a recent supersized episode of the children's show. But Zillow doesn't think moving away has to be all bad. In fact, this might be a good thing, a narrator says in a new advertisement from the real estate marketing company that references the Bluey episode of The Sign. The episode aired April 14th on Disney Plus. The ad features 4 adult Australian cattle dogs. The advertisement even includes narration from actor Dan Broom, who voices Uncle Stripe on Bluey. Jody?
Thank you, Steve. I just became aware of Bluey yesterday when my sister said she won a basket at her school that was the Bluey basket. Ready to Up Your Investments? By Paul Davidson with USA Today. The stock market, not to mention life itself, has been a roller coaster over the past few years. In rinse and repeat-like cycles, stocks have tumbled as the pandemic, inflation, or the Federal Reserve's interest rate hikes have darkened the economic look, and rebounded as the pandemic or inflation have eased and the Fed has forecast market-friendly rate cuts. After hitting record highs, markets have wobbled again in recent weeks amid an inflation flare-up that has sparked concerns over whether the Fed really will lower rates this year. What's the average investor to do? Many experts say the answer is simple. Find a registered investment advisor, RIA, that you like that fits your financial profile. RIAs are companies with fiduciary duty to always act in their clients' best interest. They charge fees rather than sales commissions and employ investment advisor representatives, IARs, who are licensed to give financial advice and are increasingly taking a holistic approach to their clients' financial lives. Other financial firms, such as broker-dealers earn commissions from selling stocks, bonds, or mutual funds, and need only provide suitable advice. Sometimes they may sell more expensive products that generate more revenue, but don't necessarily meet a person's long-term goal. To streamline your search for an advisor, USA Today has partnered with market research from firm Statista for the second straight year to rank the top 500 RIAs in our searchable list. That's no mean feat. There are 32,600 RIA firms at the end of 2022 that managed about $115 trillion in assets. About 99% of the money is overseen by 15,100 larger companies registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission, according to the Investment Advisor Association, IAA, a trade group for RIAs. The remaining 17,500 RIAs each manage less than $100 million and are registered with state agencies. The ranking is based on the growth of the company's assets under management, AUM, over the short and long term, and the number of recommendations they receive from clients and peers. This year, besides providing an overall ranking, USA Today and Statista included separate groupings based on the amount of assets RIAs oversee, so readers can compare firms in similar size classes. Smaller companies may have fewer clients per advisor and provide more personal service, though that's not always the case. Larger firms may be able to charge lower fees because of volume-based discounts or have more resources for specialized services. You also might want to choose a firm based on its location, which is included in the rankings. The top-ranked company, New York City-based West Fuller Advisors, saw its assets grow 58% in a year and 69% over 5 years. Number two, Align Impact of Santa Monica, California, is in a smaller size category, but its assets more than doubled in a year. Cary Street Partners of Richmond, Virginia, 11th on the main list, gathered lots of recommendations from clients and peers. RIAs can serve a vital purpose, particularly when the market and economy are volatile, as they are now, industry officials say. When there's uncertainty in the market, that is when you need advice, says Gail Bernstein, general counsel of the IAA. There's a lot of hand-holding. A growing number of Americans who handled their own investments before the ups and downs of pandemic now want help, says Eileen Stevens, a wealth advisor at Corient Private Wealth, an RIA in New York City. They're saying it's hard and scary to do it on my own, Stevens says. And while some people just want an RIA to manage their investment portfolio, most are looking for more comprehensive financial services that include retirement, estate and tax planning, as well as bill paying and college savings roadmaps, in some cases, Stephen says. Such a sweeping approach, she says, can not only maximize investment returns, but also map out a life strategy that may include starting a family or buying a house. During the market downturn, some people panic and want to immediately sell stock holdings, Bernstein of IAA says. Investment advisors, she says, may talk them off the cliff and tell them to just sit tight. They might say, you'll need that money in 6 months because you have a college payment coming up, Bernstein says. RIAs typically charge an annual percentage of the assets they manage, often about 1%. Someone with a $100,000 portfolio would pay about $1,000 a year. An advisor typically would oversee the money throughout the year, buying and selling securities based on the client's overall goals. RIAs typically require minimum investments, such as $100,000 or $500,000, though in most cases a custodian, such as a bank or broker-dealer, holds the cash. Advisors also can charge a fixed annual fee no matter how much you invest. A flat fee based on the one-time preparation of a broad financial plan or an hourly fee. Many RIAs specialize in market niches that require more nuanced knowledge of their clients' needs, such as athletes, restaurant owners, divorcees, medical professionals, or Generation Z members. A growing share of people in their 20s are seeking financial advice, Stephen says, including freshly minted tech or hedge fund executives who accumulate wealth early in their careers. Some young adults want guidance on how to strike a work-life balance that allows them to use their savings for trips or other experiences, she says. Others want to ensure their investments meet environmental, social, and governance goals. Young investors are also helping drive the popularity of robo-advisors, digital platforms that create portfolios based on algorithms at low cost with little or no minimum investment. But those that are RIAs must still serve the client's best interest. The obligation is still the same, Bernstein says. You can learn more about a firm's specialties and background on its website, as well as from the firm's form ADV, which is what it files with the SEC. You can verify a firm's registration with the SEC Investment Advisor Public Disclosure Tool and check the backgrounds and any disciplinary actions at the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority's FINRA's broker check website. And the top financial advisor firms for 2024 are West Fuller from New York. They manage $1 billion to $5 billion. Align Impact from Santa Monica, California, $500 million to $1 billion. Crescent from Chicago, over $5 billion. Foundations Investment Advisors from Phoenix, $1 billion to $5 billion. Foreign Wealth Management from San Francisco, $1 billion to $5 billion. Capital Wealth Planning from Naples, Florida, over $5 billion. Drive Wealth Management from Lehigh, Utah, $1 billion to $5 billion. Ritz-Holtz Wealth Management in New York, $1 billion to $5 billion. Sequoia Financial Group from Akron, Ohio, over $5 billion. T. Rowe Price Advisory Service from Owings Mills, Maryland, $1 billion to $5 billion. Cary Street Partners with Richmond, Virginia, over $5 billion. Savant Wealth Management from Rockford, Illinois, over $5 billion. Single Point Partners from Boston, $500 million to $1 billion. EP Wealth from Torrance, California, over $5 billion. Wealth Enhancement Group from Plymouth, Minnesota, over $5 billion. Journey Advisory Group from Covington, Kentucky, that one's close by, $500 million to $1 billion. Soltis Advisors in St. George, Utah, over $5 billion. Walkner Condon Financial Advisors from Madison, Wisconsin, up to a $500 million. Oversfied from Wilmington, Delaware, $1 billion to $5 billion. Selwood Consulting in Portland, Oregon, $1 billion to $5 billion. McClone Shetner Wealth Management in Appleton, Wisconsin, $500 million to $1 billion. MIGO 17 Beechwood, Ohio, $1 billion to $5 billion. Mercer Advisors, Denver, over $5 billion. Nightline Wealth Partners, Sherman Oaks, California, up to $500 million. And the last is Iger Wealth Management from San Diego, up to $500 million. Steve?
Thank you, Jody. We're reading the money section for Wednesday, May the 1st of USA Today. This front page article is entitled, What Will the Fed Say About Rate Cuts After Recent High Inflation Reports? With a question mark. Index PCE, which the Fed watches more closely, followed a similar pattern, though it's running about a percentage point lower. Overall inflation is at 2.7%, and the core measure is 2.8%, still well above the Fed's 2% goal, according to the PCE. Why did inflation slow down last year? Price of used cars, furniture, and other goods dropped as pandemic-related supply chain bottlenecks resolved. Why has inflation recently risen so high? The cost of services such as rent, car insurance, and health care has continued to climb sharply because of rising wages linked to COVID-19-induced labor shortages. What does Jerome Powell say about inflation? Initially, Powell said price increases in January and February simply could have been blips on a steady path to a 2% inflation. And Fed officials' forecast for 3 rate cuts this year remained intact. But after CPI and PCE reports last month showing that prices surged again in March, Powell took a different tone. Quote, the recent data has clearly not given us greater confidence that inflation is heading substantially to 2%, and instead indicate that it's likely to take longer than expected to achieve that confidence, he said at a forum a couple of weeks ago. Future markets that had projected the first rate cut in June and a total of 3 decreases in 2024 now predict just 1 cut in September. Is inflation easing? Most economists believe it is. Goldman Sachs says the recent flare-up can be traced to temporary factors. Rent, which made up 36% of March's price surge, actually has fallen back on new tenant leases, but that hasn't yet rippled to existing lease rentals. Renewals. Car insurance, which had soared 22% in the past year, is still catching up to a COVID-19-related leap in a new vehicle prices at state regulators' approved rate hikes. With vehicle prices flat or falling, insurance premium increases should soon moderate, Goldman says. And financial service costs vaulted higher because portfolios were increasing in value during the market rally, and investment company fees are typically based on a percentage of assets, but the rally recently has sputtered. Meanwhile, the wage growth is slowing as the labor market cools and immigration expands the supply of workers, a development that should curtail price increases. Goldman says it expects core PCE inflation to slip to 2.6% by July. Barclays broadly agrees and expects inflation to slow noticeably starting in June, but the cost of some services such as dining out and haircuts could continue to advance more sharply as pay increases stay elevated in the same industries due to lingering labor shortages. Barclays says it reckons core PCE and valuation will tick up to 2.9% in December. Goldman expects 2 rate cuts in July and November, though the research firm acknowledges the risk that stubborn inflation could limit on or even delay cuts to 2025 or beyond. Barclays anticipates just one cut in September. So what will Powell say on Wednesday? Both Goldman and Barclays expect Powell to reiterate his comment that it will likely take longer than expected to achieve that greater confidence needed to cut rates. Barclays economist Mark Gianni doesn't expect him to be very specific about the number of cuts, since Fed officials aren't updating their forecast, and Powell said Fed decisions will hinge on the course inflation takes in coming months. But Powell could downplay the relevance of the Fed's March forecast, signaling that three rate cuts aren't likely, Giannini says. Jody?
Thank you, Steve. The next article on the front page is titled, Wheelchair Basketball Team Slams Biggest Miss, by Zach Whitaker. Veronda Shields and Justin Walker's trip to Richmond, Virginia for the National Wheelchair Basketball Association National Championship was not a slam dunk. Walker, who plays for the Phoenix Suns D2 wheelchair team, said that when he and his teammates arrived in Virginia, they found that his girlfriend, Shields, and a fellow wheelchair basketball player described as a 300-piece jigsaw puzzle. The baggage handlers had separated wheels from dozens of wheelchair frames while loading them onto the plane. When we got there, it was like they weren't prepared for us at all. There was no communication from Denver, like we just packed you the world's biggest mess of a cargo situation. Shields told USA Today, all the wheels are off our chairs and they don't have any additional employees to help us. Social media video shows the scene when Shields and Walker arrived in Richmond. The Suns flew on Southwest Airlines from Phoenix to Richmond via Denver on April the 10th, and Shields said there were a few other teams participating in the tournament on their flight. She said that the tournament organizers had been in touch with the Richmond airport operators and with Southwest for months before the event to make sure everyone was prepared. But the system still fell apart for the players during their trip. We understand what we're asking. What we need to bring is more than a normal passenger. That's why we go ahead and communicate, Walker told USA Today. The lack of knowledge is unreal. It's just sickening. Shields said the scene on arrival in Richmond was so chaotic that the gate agent eventually called the police because so many players and other travelers were going back and forth into the jetway to collect pieces of their wheelchairs that had been separated. Some of the travelers in the group were not wheelchair users, and some of those who brought wheelchairs have some mobility without their device, so they were able to work on piecing things back together. The situation did not improve in the baggage claim area. When we got down to baggage claim, the people that were down there wasn't nearly enough staff for this situation, Shields said. The employees in the airport were telling passengers that bags had been left on the plane to accommodate the unusually high number of wheelchairs, and it led to frustration for everyone in the arrivals hall. It was insane the way they were passengers yelling at us. It was just awful. They were just blaming everything on the wheelchair, Shields said. Southwest Airport Manager in Richmond sent an email to team captains and event organizers acknowledging the incident. I want to apologize to those teams that experienced a prolonged delay and negative experience when arriving here in RIC over the last 2 days. There have been communication to all cities involved in your travel, plans for well over a month, and our goals were to make your travel experience as smooth as possible, We failed on our end for several of you. The email, which USA Today reviewed, said. In a separate statement to USA Today, Southwest Airlines said it would work to do better. We have reviewed the situation and addressed it with the appropriate parties. We value our customers and incorporated their feedback to strive for a better experience the next time they fly with Southwest. The statement said, we apologize anytime we don't meet customers' expectations and have a long history of caring for our customers. For Shields and Walker, the statements don't go far enough. They say they encountered similar issues on the trip home as they connected in Chicago midway. For me, it's the lack of listening by Southwest employees and the ground staff, Walker said. If we have to listen to them about how many exits are on the plane, if we have to listen to them about what to do and what not to do, then they should have the decency to listen to us. Shields and Walker said they want Southwest to improve its communications with disabled travelers and provide more in-depth training for baggage handlers who handle mobility equipment. According to the Department of Transportation, Shields and Walker's experience is hardly an outlier. In 2023, U.S. Airlines transported 835,327 wheelchairs and other mobility aids last year, and there were 11,527 reports of damage, a rate of 1.38 devices damaged per 100 carried. Steve?
Thank you, Jody. This next article is by columnist Johnny C. Taylor. He tackles your human resources questions as a part of a series for USA Today. He is president and CEO of the Society for Human Resource Management, the world's largest HR professional society, and author of the book Reset, A Leader's Guide to Work in an Age of Upheaval. The first question he's asked is, since leaving the job I've had for almost a decade, I have primarily conducted my job search online. I've used the same resume design since I started working 12 years ago. Should I update my resume design to be more effective? What do you recommend for building a modern resume? This is a question from Sandra. Answer by Mr. Taylor. Updating your resume design can indeed be a wise move, especially if you've been using the same format for a long time. A fresh, modern design can help your resume stand out and leave a positive impression on recruiters and hiring managers. Here's what I recommend for building a modern resume. Clean, professional layout. Opt for a layout that's visually appealing and easy to read. Avoid cluttered designs and overly decorative elements that may distract from your content. Font selection. Stick to standard, easy-to-read fonts such as Arial, Calibri, or Times New Roman. These fonts are widely accepted and compatible with applicant tracking systems, ensuring your resume is easily scannable by both humans and software. Incorporate keywords. Tailor your resume to each job application by incorporating industry-specific keywords and phrases relevant to the position. Many companies use ATS to screen resumes, so this will increase the likelihood of your resume being noticed. Organize by sections. Structure your resume into clear sections, including contact information, summary or objective, work experience, skills, education, and any additional relevant section, such as certifications or volunteer work. This organization makes it easy for recruiters to quickly find the information they need. Summary objective statements. Start your resume with a summary that highlights your key qualifications and career goals. Keep it concise, focusing on what sets you apart and what you aim to achieve in your career. Accomplishment-oriented experience. When listing your work experience, focus on highlighting your accomplishments rather than just listing job duties. Use quantifiable achievements whenever possible to demonstrate your impact, such as increasing sales by a certain percentage or leading successful project. Skills section. Dedicate a section to showcasing your key skills and competencies, including both technical skills and soft skills relevant to the job. This section provides recruiters with a quick overview of your capabilities. Proofreading. Before submitting your resume, thoroughly proofread it to ensure there are no grammatical errors, typos, or formatting issues. Considering have someone else review your resume for feedback and more insight. By updating your resume with a modern design and incorporating these key elements, you can increase your chances of making a strong impression in today's competitive job market. Good luck with your job search. The next question is by Shanette. I've been denied PTO requests on multiple occasions, which is becoming increasingly frustrating. Most of them are denied on the grounds of staffing needs. Do I have any recourse in fighting these denials? What can I do to ensure PTO approvals? Answer: you may indeed have some recourse in addressing these denials and paid time off requests. Start by reviewing your company's PTO policy and procedures. Many employers have limits in the number of employees who can be on leave simultaneously to ensure adequate staffing levels. First, check if your PTO requests were made in accordance with the company policy. If they were not, ensure that you adhere to the established procedures for frequent request to increase the likelihood of approval. However, if you followed company policy and your requests were still denied, consider discussing the matter with your manager or the human rights team. Seek clarifications on the reasons for the denials and inquire about potential strategies to improve the company rate for your request, the company approval rate for your requests. It's also essential to consider whether your state mandates sick leave and if your company uses PTO to fulfill these requirements. If so, your employer may be obligated to approve leave requests that align with qualifying reasons for sick leave under the law. Excuse me. If you're certain about your state's sick leave requirements, consult your HR. That is, if you're not certain, if you're uncertain. Ultimately, unless there is contractual agreement or policy stating otherwise, employers typically have discretion in managing PTO usage. However, by following company procedures and addressing your concerns with management or HR, you may increase the likelihood of having your PTO requests approved very frequently. Jody?
Thank you, Steve. The next short article is titled, What to Know About Carnival Cruise Line's New Italian-Style Ship, by Nathan Diller with USA Today. Carnival Cruise Line is bringing a touch of Italy to Southern California. The line launched Carnival Firenze, inspired by its namesake city, this week. The vessel sailed to its maiden voyage from its Long Beach home port on Thursday. We carry more guests than any other cruise line from California, and now this ship is giving us the opportunity to offer more fun to more people sailing from Long Beach, Christine Duffy, the line's president, said in a news release. The recipe combining this ship's beautiful Italian theming with the familiarity of our friendly team's hospitality is, in a word, perfecto. The ship is the second in the Carnival Fun Italian-style concept after sister ship Carnival Venezia joined the fleet last summer. Both were originally part of Costa Cruises, also owned by parent company Carnival Corporation, before being rehomed. Where will Carnival Firenze sail? The roughly 5,000 guest ship will offer Baja, Mexico, and Mexican Riviera cruises ranging from 3 to 7 days. Stops include destinations like Cabo, San Lucas, Puerto Vallarta, and Catalina Island. What can guests expect? Built in 2020, Firenze was refurbished this year to add Carnival-specific touches. Those include staple venues like the Fahrenheit 555 Steakhouse and Java Blue Cafe. but the line leans into the ship's Italian motif. The ship's atrium was designed with Florence's Piazza del Duomo in mind, and the Lido deck takes in influences from the Italian Riviera. There's even a replica of Michelangelo's David on board that used to be on Carnival Pride. The real sculpture is in Florence's Accademia Gallery. The theme extends to the food and drink options, with eateries like Italian specialty restaurant Il Viaggio, Mexican style Italian fusion venue Tomodoro, and La Strada Grill serving Italian street food. Fiziante specializes in bubbly drinks, and passengers can sip craft cocktails and Italian coffee at Arami. Other features include the Waterworks Water Park and Serenity Adult Only Retreat. How much does Carnival Firenze cost? Prices vary based on sailing date and other factors, but a five-day Mexican Riviera cruise departing on May the 30th now starts at $409 per person based on double occupancy, according to Carnival's website. The fare includes much of the food on the ship, drinks like regular coffee and iced tea, and more. Steve?
Thank you, Jody. This article is by Charles Trepani of USA Today. It's entitled, Disneyland's Pixar Fest Offers Lovable Show for Kids. Anaheim, California. Madonna has got nothing on Edna Mode. The Incredibles character slides side to side on stage, hitting Vogue poses that could rival the Queen of Pop herself. Watching with rapt attention are several small children, all of whom appear to be no more than 10. They jump up and down with her, hitting their own poses and sliding left to right. At several points, non-character cast members give energetic dance instructions to the kids over the music, telling them to flex, rock back and forth, clap, run, freeze, and more. The kid-friendly moves looks as if they could have come straight from an 80s workout video, but instead of Jane Fonda, the instructors are Edna Mode, Mr. and Mrs. Incredible, Frozone, and other beloved characters from Toy Story and Inside Out. It's all part of Pixar Pal's Playtime Party. Try saying that three times fast. Pixar Pal's Playtime Party. Okay, a new show at Fantasyland Theater at Southern California's Disneyland for Pixar Fest, which runs through August the 4th. USA Today caught a media preview of the show on Thursday, as well as a glimpse of the wide array of creative food offerings. Here's what to expect. What's the Pixar Palace Playtime Party like? Really tiring if you're a kid, but really relaxing if you're a parent. Isn't that how theme parks ought to be? For about an hour, cast members get participants up on their feet and encourage them to dance, taking them through the moves that include walking in an inappropriate fashion, show, and forming a conga line. It's an energetic tour. Hour, but there's plenty of bleacher seats in the back for parents and kids who just want to sit and watch. It's also a great opportunity to see some beloved Pixar characters up close. Woody, Jesse, and Bo Peep from Toy Story join the non-costume cast members on stage, as do Happiness and Sadness from Inside Out. The characters also come down from the stage to dance with the kids on the floor, creating a more lively and more likely, more memorable experience of interacting with a character than waiting around several minutes for a quick photo. The show itself is pretty adorable and serves as more of an activity than a viewing. What's the food like? Decadent. Chances are, wherever you are, whatever you're in the mood for, they have it for Pixar Fest. So long as that mood doesn't include anything healthy. But aren't Disneyland days automatic cheat days anyway? On display for media were cookies and cupcakes galore, Finding Nemo cake pops, churros covered in gummy candy and chocolate sauce, and mini chocolate cakes decorated like tires from cars. and those sweats don't even scratch the surface. For more savory options, there are also chicken and potato waffles in bite-sized pieces, pesto pasta, a pizza top with burger patties, and even a Ratatouille pizzazzita, a mini pizza topped with a mini pizza topped with eggplant, squash, zucchini, tomato sauce, and a wedge of French Camembert cheese. What else is at Picture Fest? So much. There's decor, where you can pose for photos at the front of both Disneyland and California's Adventure. There's Better Together, a Pixar Pal celebration, which is California Adventure Parade with the most Pixar characters of any parade in the Disney park. There's Club Pixar, which is the interactive DJ dance party that also features game-like cornhole and tic-tac-toe. And there's Together Forever, a Pixar nighttime spectacular, an evening projection show that includes beloved Pixar characters, old and new, as well as new emotions from the upcoming Inside Out 2 film. Jody, we've got about a minute left.
Okay, I'm going to start with our close-by state news. Ohio, and this is a good one. University of Cincinnati Gardner Neuroscience Institute just received its second largest donation in history, $13.5 million. The gift comes from the estate of late Cincinnati millionaire Hugh Hoffman to use toward ALS research and patient care. Want to read the next one?
Okay, Indiana, Bloomington. The day before Indiana University students plan to set up a pro-Palestinian solidarity encampment on Dunn Meadow, IU officials quietly changed its on-campus events policy to require tents and other structures to receive prior approval from the university. The next day, 33 protesters at the encampment were arrested, shoved with riot shields and handcuffed with zip ties by Indiana State Police troopers, who told them their use of camping tents and canopies was unlawful. Protesters say they were unaware of the policy change, and many believe that they were targeted. Well, you've been listening to USA Today, Hour 2, for Wednesday, May the 4th. This is Stephen Horde and
Jody Horde.
We hope you've enjoyed listening as we've shared the money section and the opinion page for this day, the first day of May. That used to be May Day. Is that still true?
I think so, some places.
We hope you've enjoyed listening, and we're going to be gone for a few weeks, but we'll be back again in about 3 weeks. So we'll look forward to seeing you then. Thanks for listening.